Hello, this is Christian Okoye, former Kansas City Chiefs. You are listening to Grilling Truth.
Welcome to the Grilling Truth NFL Legend Show, brought to you by Gridiron Mo. Gridiron Mo is a new interactive football app where you get to call what you think the offense or defense should do during a live NFL game and see what all other fans have called also. Check out Gridiron Mo at www.gridironmo.com. As always, I'm your host for the Grilling Truth Legend Show, Mike Goodpaster, and we have a special guest tonight. NFL quarterback for 13 years, as a Cincinnati Bengal, 1995, made the Pro Bowl. Help me welcome to the Grilling Truth, Jeff Blake.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
All right. Hey, honor to have you on. I'm a Bengals fan, and I'm still trying to figure out why they screwed you over the way they did. But
well, you know, that's, you know, NFL, you know, that's there for not for long, so. Get in and you do the best you can while you can while you're there. And, you know, I had a good time in Cincinnati. They gave me my opportunity and my shot, so I'm always grateful for that. And I'll just continue to grow and get better as I continue to play.
All right, so take us back to your senior year at Seminole High School. You were recruited as a quarterback. What are the differences between then and now and how a player gets recruited?
Well, first of all, there was no social media. Second of all, there was no recruiting sites like Rivals and Scouts.com, and there were no rankings, stars, and all that stuff. So it was very random, the recruiting, and you just had to be a good player, and somebody had just to happen to see you play, and if a coach was down scouting in the area, they would find out, who are the kids that's making noise, and they would, you know, reporters would tell them, who, you know, the kids that were, you know, playing well. And next thing you know, you would have a scout come out and watch you, you know, sitting in the stands. But it's different now, you know, social media with Rivals and all the Nike, the camps, of course, Nikes and Rivals Camp, FBU, and it's a lot of the stuff that goes on now that the kids are able to get marketed and promoted to where, you know, we didn't have that back in the 80s.
Yeah, nowadays you get the fifth string defensive end who's got a highlight film on Huddle or something to send it all
exactly.
Over the place also.
Exactly.
So actually, it might be tougher today because your film kind of gets lost in the shuffle, possibly.
Well, you know, that too, but, you know, it's better than having nothing. You know, it's better than having nothing. You know, just the competition is just so more vast now, you know, the competition. So.
All right, so we go back to your senior year. What made you choose East Carolina?
They're the only Division I school to recruit me to play quarterback.
and I mean, you go there, they hadn't been, I mean, they'd been all right. I think they were all right in mid-80s. They had pretty good teams, but you became the starter your junior year. And then your senior season, I think you guys lost the opener in a close game to Illinois, and then you went, ran the table, won 11 straight games.
All right, see you tomorrow.
Including the great, huh?
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, that's all right. And including the great bowl game against North Carolina State. You want to talk a little bit about that season?
Well, you know, season started off, like you said, we started off in Illinois against Spike Illini. We lost that game, a close game, 38-31. And we realized that we had a good team and that we could be competitive. And we realized that if we could just stay in every game, we could have opportunity to win each game. And we went in each game with that attitude. You know, as the weeks went by, we win a game, we win another one. They say, you know, we won four or five games in a row. And then we start feeling more confident about what we're doing as a team and gaining that confidence. And we, you know, the roller coaster started rolling real fast for us. Next thing you know, we're undefeated for the rest of the season. And get ready to go play one of our in-state rivals in the Peach Bowl on New Year's Day, on New Year's morning. And that was one of the best games I ever played in, you know, towards my career, is that Peach Bowl, because we were down 34-17. With 8 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter, and was able to come, you know, make a comeback and win that game at the end of the game, and that was an awesome game for us.
Yeah, and I think you guys that year, your last five wins were against top 25 teams, also.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we play a lot of, you know, top teams. One of those teams were number five in the nation, which was Pittsburgh, I think, at the time.
Yeah, and really that was a catapult. East Carolina became a lot better program after you were there, which, I mean, you had to be proud of that also.
Yeah, we were. They had a lot better opportunities to recruit, a lot better opportunities to staff for us coaching, you know, and continue to win games like they were doing. It was great for the university and great for the guys that were there as well.
All right, so we go into the draft year. What were your thoughts leading up to the draft? Did you think you would be drafted, or what was your feeling?
Well, I signed with a good agent, Ralph Sanders, out of Pittsburgh, and the buzz on me was, yeah, I was definitely going to get drafted, just didn't know which round. And I wound up going in sixth round. I was projected to go in the fourth, but wound up getting drafted in the sixth. At that time, it was 12 rounds. So to go in the sixth round was still high during that time, if it was 12, so like today it's 7 rounds, I think, so it's like going in the third or fourth round today. I was happy with that, just to get the opportunity, because 2 years before that, I didn't even know if I was even have the opportunity to even play in the league. But I knew I was going to give it a shot and give it a try. So once I was drafted by the Jets, and then it was just me having the opportunity to perform.
So what was your time like in New York? I think you were there, a couple of years?
I was there for 2 years. I backed up my first year, Ken O'Brien and Brownie Nagel. Then my second year was Boomer Esiason and Brownie Nagel. And I was third string both of those years. And and going into my third year, I had a great preseason. But they had drafted a guy by the name of Glenn Foley out of Buffalo College in the third round. So they wound up cutting me and keeping him. And then once they cut me, the Bengals picked me up, and I went down to Cincinnati. And then the next year I was in the Pro Bowl.
You talked about that. You go to Cincinnati, which the Bengals in the 90s, especially 91 through 93, they were terrible. I mean, their quarterback coach at the time was an NFL legend, Kenny Anderson. You want to talk a little bit about what it was like to work with Ken and what your relationship was like with him?
It was a great relationship. My relationship was with Bruce Cox. Bruce was with me at the Jets. Bruce drafted me at the Jets. So my relationship was more with Bruce than it was with Kenny. But Kenny was a good quarterback coach. He taught me a lot. He understood the game, which was easy for me to talk to him because as a player, it's a lot easier to talk to somebody who's played the game versus somebody who hasn't played the game. And so I was able to relate, and we were able to relate to each other when it came to looking at film or calling plays or understanding what my reads were. It was a lot easier with Ken than it was with other guys that were my quarterback coaches in the league that never actually played the position, but were coaching the position. So, but Bruce was really the catalyst behind everything and the one who actually got me down to Cincinnati and the one who gave me the opportunity.
All right, now probably one of your most famous games was, I think it was your first start, 23-20 loss to the Dallas Cowboys. You want to talk a little bit about that game?
Well, I had an opportunity to go out and play, and I was going to leave it all on the field, and I did a good job of, preparing that week. And I really think the Cowboys underestimated, what we were capable of doing because, they had a guy that was playing quarterback that had never played before, and they figured, we're going to go in and shut this kid down. And the following week, they were going to play the San Francisco 49ers, which was, they're pretty much their rival at the time, And we went out and we ran the game plan to perfection and we executed and we made plays. And from that point on, it shot off my career.
Yeah, and that started the Shake and Blake era in Cincinnati. What were those 2 years like for you in Cincinnati?
Man, it was fun. It was fun. And given the opportunity to go out and play the game I love, and I was very passionate about it, and had opportunity to go out and make plays and do it over and over and over again with the guys, with Carl Pickens and Darnay Scott and those guys. And I just had a good time doing it. Wish it could have lasted a little bit longer, but, good things don't last forever.
Yeah, and I had one other game to talk to you about. I'm friends with Leon Searcy. He does a NFL Pick'em show with me on here, and I always bust him about it. But the game in Pittsburgh where you beat him, I think it was on a Thursday night. So you want to talk a little bit? I think that was a 95 season also, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a TNT Thursday night game. And, we came into Pittsburgh, and we always gave Pittsburgh a fist, though. I mean, we would always score up. They would beat us one time a year, and we would beat them one time. They usually beat us in Cincinnati. We usually beat them in Pittsburgh. That's just how it was for like 3 or 4 years. So, but it was fun always playing against them, always playing against Haslett and Cowan and those guys. And, I enjoyed it, being able to go out and try to defeat them.
You went from 5 or 6 games into the 94 season, not even really getting much time in the NFL, to a year later going to the Pro Bowl. I think you threw a 92-yard touchdown to Yancey Thigpen. What was the Pro Bowl experience like for you?
Well, it was great. I had opportunity to play with some of the best players in the NFL and to take my family to Hawaii and to just soak it up and enjoy the game. You know, this is a great game, and it was very fun. Met a lot of the guys that I probably would never play with or played against, you know, during that time. So you see them play every week and every Sunday, and I had opportunity to play with some of them. It was good. It was great.
Yeah, and you also, I mean, I think you're known as being one of the best that's ever lived in the NFL at throwing the deep ball. What made you so good at throwing the deep ball? Is there a secret to it?
Yeah, it is, but I can't give it to you. I can't give you the secret to the sauce.
Well, I would figure it was just—it's more of a finesse throw than what people think it is. Also,
it is. It's a three-point shot. Exactly what it is.
Yeah.
No matter what Steph Curry shoots three from, it's the same shot.
You were Steph Curry in 1995 in the NFL.
Yeah. If it's from the key, or it's from the three-point line, or it's 4 feet from the three-point line, it's still the same shot. Nothing changes. And
yeah,
a lot of people don't realize that. And, you know, all they do is put more air in the ball, and that's what allows you to throw the ball further, deeper, and you have to be able to follow the ball. A lot of people don't follow the ball with their eyes. They watch the receiver the whole time, and that's wrong. So, you know, it's like when you shoot a basketball. I'm giving you the secret to the sauce. It's like when you shoot a basketball, at some point your eyes have to come off the rim and follow the ball to the basket. Same way when you throw a deep ball.
All right. Now, you talked about your receivers there, which I think Carl Pickens, I think, was the most talented, probably the best wide receiver the Bengals have had. I think he gets a bad rap a lot of times. I don't think people understand what, you know, the 1990s Bengals entailed. But you want to talk a little bit about Carl Pickens and Darnay Scott?
You know, I had two great receivers. It was fun playing with them because they both understood their roles. They both knew when they were going to get the ball. You know, they both wanted the ball, but they were both excited when each other made plays. You know, they weren't jealous of each other, which made it easier to quarterback both of those guys. They weren't competing against one another. They were actually playing with one another and hoping each other did good. And when you have two receivers like that, you know, it's easy to go out and play as a quarterback.
All right, now the Bengals, 1997, before the season starts, they signed Boomer Esiason. Did that upset you at all?
You know, I felt like, you know, it was some politics behind that, but I didn't let it affect me. You know, I continued to do what I needed to do, and I felt more disrespected the year after that when they signed Neil O'Donnell than Boomer. Because I knew when
they
signed
Neil O'Donnell and Scott Mitchell, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Scott Mitchell was after me.
Oh, okay, that's right. No. They drafted
Scott Mitchell was after me. They drafted Akili Smith, which was supposed to be the guy to come in and, you know, change everything and turn it everything around.
Yeah, that didn't work out so well for him.
Well, when I left the system, when I left the Bengals, I go to the Saints, and the Saints were 3-13 2 years in a row, and we were 7-3 before I got hurt. And
yeah,
I was getting ready to go to the Pro Bowl.
That was my next question. I mean, that had to feel good to prove, especially to Mike Brown and the Bengals, that you were still capable of being a starting NFL quarterback.
Yeah, well, you got to understand, I was supposed to be there in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's how they always looked at me. They never really gave me the opportunity to be the guy. I wasn't supposed to be there. So when
you
look at it
that
way. Do you
think that was just because you came from a small school, short in stature? I mean, do you think that, I mean, I don't know. What was your relationship like with Mike Brown while you were there?
I really didn't have a relationship with Mike. I told you my relationship was with Bruce.
Yeah. Well.
So my relationship was more with Bruce. I mean, it was just, you know, it was more of a control factor when it came to me. Because I wasn't allowed to do a lot of the things that number seven was allowed to do when he was there. Boomer was a very great player, but he was a really good he understood the Players Association. He was a radical.
Yeah,
Boomer,
he understood the politics.
He understood the politics. Boomer was a radical. Boomer would do his radio show, do whatever he wanted to do. And, you know, Boomer had everything going the things the way he wanted to do it. He was a radical. I didn't care what Mike Brown said and whatever. But when I got there, you know, Mike Brown shut everything down. I couldn't do no radio shows. I couldn't do anything. You know, he didn't want me doing no TV, no radio shows. I couldn't have my own radio show, any of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, so, did he ever give a reason for that?
I mean, everybody else had their own radio show. That was a starting quarterback or a big-time running back or whatever.
Yeah.
Everybody. They had their own radio show or something.
Yeah, you know, well, so, I can tell you, I've been a Bengal fan my whole life. In the decade of the 90s, I just act like it never happened. Because other than 95 and 96, you, Carl Pickens, everything, I mean, the draft picks those years, I remember they drafted the chain-smoking tight end in the third round, Sean Brewer. I mean, it was rough. But looking back on your career, would you change anything about it?
Oh, no, I wouldn't. It was a learning experience for me, and I learned a lot. And the trials and the tribulations I went through as a player on the field and off the field, you know, was a life lesson for me. And it was things that I'm able to pass down to my kids today. So,
yeah, and one of the coolest things I saw is you have a son that played at Auburn, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and his pro day, you know, who was the guy that threw to him on his pro day?
I did.
I mean, how cool is that? I mean, you're probably standing on the yard when he's 7 years old throwing the ball with him, and now it's 14 years later, and you're standing on his pro day throwing the ball to him.
Yeah. Well, I'm throwing for my nephew tomorrow.
Oh, hell, that makes it even better.
That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here in Arizona, because I'm throwing to my nephew tomorrow for his pro day.
Okay, where'd your nephew play at?
Arizona.
Well, could have been Arizona State, too. So.
Yeah, University of Arizona. My bad.
All right, so what occupies your time these days other than throwing pro day to your
I train quarterbacks most of the time. I train quarterbacks in the process of opening my own football training facility in Austin, Texas, that specializes in on the field and off the field, life skills, ball skills, strength conditioning, speed and conditioning, recruiting, second career planning, the whole gambit. So,
all right, so if you're training a quarterback, what's the first thing you look at in a quarterback?
If he has a natural throw motion or not.
Now, is that something that you find is pretty rare nowadays?
Well, no. Most kids have natural throw motions. I rarely see a guy that comes out there and throws that looks like a girl when he throws it.
There's still some of them, though.
There's still some of them.
I mean, Jeff, I really want to thank you for calling in. It was an honor to have you on the show. Like I said,
you're one of my favorite
all-time Bengals.
All right, thank you. I appreciate you.
All right, thanks a lot, Jeff.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, guys, that was Jeff Blake, former Pro Bowl quarterback with the Cincinnati Bengals. I want to remind you to check out thegruelingtruth.net. Check us out on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, and about any other outlet that has any kind of podcast sports-wise. We will have also coming up the rest of this week, we'll have John Lieber, who was a pitcher in the major leagues, won 140 games with the Cubs, Pirates, Yankees. We'll also have former IBF junior welterweight champion Vince Phillips, who upset Kostyazoo back in 1997. Also, you can catch me, Matt Andrew Scavage, Joe Rodriguez, counting down our top 10 quarterbacks. And, of course, Bill Grohm with his Natural Medicine Show will be back Friday night. Not sure what the topic is yet. We're waiting to tabulate what people want us to talk about, and then we'll figure that out and talk about that. Make sure you check out GridironMo and SteelbergBox.com, two of our sponsors. But so for Jeff Blake, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legend